The views and opinions expressed in this show do not represent those of Hutton Broadcasting or its employees.
Good morning. This is Daniel Cobb, doctor of oriental medicine, and welcome to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I've been a doctor of oriental medicine for about 11 years. I've taught courses at local professional schools, anatomy and physiology, and published articles in various national magazines and websites. today is August 16th, 2014. And the subject for today is going to be the annual migration of parents taking their kids to get vaccinations before going back to school. And we would love call-in questions. The phone number for call-ins is 505-424-4550. I also want to give the phone number for my clinic in case you want to pursue any of these discussions, 505-424-9527. That's my clinic phone number. So the general topic I want to address today is that a lot of people imagine, you know, they look at the healthcare bureaucracy and the healthcare systems, and they say, well, you know, there's an awful lot of people out there whose primary responsibility is to lay down the rules and protect us from disease and toxic chemicals, and generally ensure our continued health, and then to make sure that everyone understands how to accomplish these things. And this isn't just a handful of people. This is an enormous collection of agencies, individuals, regulatory groups, etc. This includes not only your family doctor, the state health department, the AMA, the CDC, the FDA, the EPA, the Institute of Medicine, National Institutes of Health, and the members of the media that help us sort it all out. These people are intelligent, well-educated, and in many cases have gone to school half their lives to prepare them for this work. So when a lot of people approach the question of getting their children vaccinated before the coming school year, a lot of these people are inclined to just go along with the recommendations because they're sure that this entire system is doing its very best to protect us. Of course, if you know me, you know I'm going to take the other side of the other side of the issue. I'm going to contend that that whole organization, that whole collection of highly educated, highly intelligent people that spent half their lives trying to figure out how to do this job the best they can is not necessarily out there operating in our best interest. Now, I want to start out with one of my common rants. My wife Karen isn't here with me today, but she was telling me about what she heard on the radio. Dr. Barry Ramo, and he's talking about what you should do before your kids go back to school. Of course, you should get their vaccines, you know. And then he proceeds to say, and you know, one more thing you could do is you could get their teeth treated with fluoride. And so now let me look at this statement, this one or two sentence statement by Dr. Barry Ramo, and put it in context from the alternative medical point of view. The vaccines, some of them but not all of them, could have some mercury in them. Even the ones that they say are mercury-free are really they reduce the mercury from maybe 25 micrograms per dose to 1 microgram. So there's still mercury in them. and the flu vaccine is much more likely to have the mercury. But in addition to mercury, which is a known neurotoxin. You also have, a lot of the vaccines have aluminum, which is also a neurotoxin. And then I want to, you know, finish the thought here. We're getting a call here in a second, which I'm going to pick up on. So the third idea is, you know, use the fluoride to protect the teeth. And I want to add fluoride to the list of neurotoxins. So let me rephrase Dr. Barry Ramo's statement. Before you send your kid back to that place where for 9 months they have to exercise their mental capacities, please give them three different kinds of neurotoxins. And now I'm going to pick up on the phone call here. Okay, JP. Oh, excuse me. Caller hung up. Okay. And that gives you an idea of how I would approach this matter. But let's go looking for some of the ideas that might be wandering through people's minds that believe that there's every reason they should fully vaccinate their children. And one is they feel, I can be sure that if the recommended vaccines were dangerous, the government would step right in and fix the problem. Now, one of the things that I brought up in some previous shows, maybe about a year ago, is an article called Deadly Immunity by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And this article was a description of this meeting that was held in June 2000 in Simpson Wood, Georgia. It was a meeting specifically to bring high-level people in from government and the pharmaceutical industry to discuss some research that had been gone through by a man named Thomas Verstraeten. And it was on trying to figure out if there was a real connection between thimerosal, which is a mercury, 50% mercury compound used as a preservative in vaccines, and autism. All of the scientific data under discussion, CDC officials repeatedly reminded the participants, was strictly embargoed. There would be no making of photocopies of documents, no taking papers with them when they left. In other words, this was a secret meeting. It was not announced to the public. No press was allowed. And no papers were to be taken. So they wanted to discuss this without any interaction with the public. So, and now I'm quoting from Mr. Verstraeten's address to the combined group. Thimerosal appeared to be responsible for a dramatic increase in autism and a host of other neurological disorders among children. I was actually stunned by what I saw, Verstraeten told those assembled at Simpson Wood, citing the staggering number of earlier studies that indicate a link between thimerosal, speech delays, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, and autism. Since 1991, when the CDC and the FDA had recommended that three additional vaccines laced with this preservative be given to extremely young infants, in one case within hours of birth, the estimated number of cases of autism had increased 15-fold, from one in every 2,500 children to one in 166. Now you'd think, okay, they've got this information, and what they're going to do with it is they're going to go out there and warn the public, this thimerosal, this mercury derivative, seems to be strongly linked to an increase in a lot of neurological problems, including autism. But this is not what they did. In fact, they did the opposite. Instead of taking immediate steps to alert the public, and now I'm reading directly from Kennedy's article, and rid the vaccine supply of thimerosal, the officials and executives at Simpsonwood spent most of the next 2 days discussing how to cover up the damaging data. Dr. Robert Brent, a pediatrician with Alfred I. DuPont Hospital for Children in Delaware, said, "This will be a resource to our very busy plaintiff attorneys in this country." Of course, meaning if this got out. Dr. John Clements, vaccine advisor to the World Health Organization, declared flatly that the study should never have been done at all. And now, meaning that it would have been better to have left undiscovered this strong link between mercury, the mercury in the thimerosal, and autism and other neurological deficits, and warned that the results will be taken by others and be used in ways beyond the control of this group. The research results have to be handled. And that is what they were. And so the result of that conference was that they arranged to have that particular data massaged several more times, each time, you know, covering up and making weaker the signal that there is a link between thimerosal and autism, till finally they got it to the point where they said, there's a little bit of increase of autism, but it's not significant, and we don't think there's any real connection. And at this point, we're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back, I believe, with a phone call and more about vaccines and why you might not be best off to trust everything that the medical bureaucracy tells you. This is Daniel Cubb, Dr. of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine, where we're discussing the childhood vaccines that are commonly gotten for the children before going back to school. And I believe we have on the line JP, who has a question or a comment. JP, are you there?
Yes, hold on. I'm on paper phone.
Okay.
Yes. Is JP?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, I was trying to do a little bit of work at the same time. My whole thing is I formed the New Mexico Organic Commodities Commission with Governor Ruth King. I've been studying our foods.
Uh-huh.
I've had many health problems, you know, going on. And I'm very 56. I'm very healthy now, and I do have 8 chronic illnesses. But, you know, I've been telling people it all starts with your food. I mean, how can anybody talk about healthcare when we don't explain to the public that we have Monsanto out there spraying herbicides and pesticides, and we're getting a lot of stuff from Brazil, and they're in a drought. California's in a drought. We're developing it. We're overpopulation. When are we going to talk about growing foods in the backyards? Pretty soon, it even seems like it might be illegal to grow food in your backyard if we are not careful.
Yeah. No, I'm completely with you there. Absolutely. I would say that, you know, my perspective, which I've outlined many times, is that food is the first order of business.
Right.
And then supplements, as frequently discussed supplements, the only problem and the reason why I mention supplements so often is because in a 1-hour radio show, food is a very complex topic.
Yes. Yes,
and,
it is.
And I would need to be on the radio all weekend. But go ahead, JP.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it's taken me 35 years, and I've been trying to. I go to legislature, and I help with farmers markets. I was one of the first men with tomatoes and studying all this type of stuff, and with our soils and water conservation. And you know, you're definitely right, and you're talking about autism. And I've worked with a lot of people, and people don't understand that I think a lot of that has to do with getting outside also, and music, rhythm. rhythm and being outside has helped a lot of my, one of my daughters helps down mm-hmm. in Albuquerque and Corrales, and they have a grant that they've opened up a farm for autistic people and stuff. And they go more by vibration. That's what I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and rhythm, and it helps them open up a bit. But yeah, I'm just like in shock about people not aware of our foods and where it's coming from in Monsanto and China buying up our farmlands. Mm-hmm. Here in Nebraska and Oklahoma. So there's a lot, like you said, a lot to be discussed. But I'm glad you guys have me on, and I've been calling a little bit, a lot. And I think we need to get out more to the public and to our younger generation.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. And, JP, I'm interested in what you're working on.
Okay.
And, and if you were to leave a call at 424-9527 with your contact information.
You got it.
You know, I would be interested in discussing it more with you off the air to see if there's something I might be interested in involving myself with.
Right, and that's 9527, you said?
424-9527. That's my clinic phone number.
Okay, I sure will call you, doctor.
Okay.
Thank you much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Now, the next topic, you know, the next idea that comes up is, of course, everything in those shots were put there to help my child, okay? And to this, you know, one of the things I want to go back and revisit is the original polio vaccine, and it's, you know, there was a particular contaminant in the polio vaccine, and it was simian virus 40. And when they first made up the vaccine, you know, for test cases, they didn't know it was there, but they did discover it. And very shortly after discovering the virus, there was one or two researchers that tested it on animals, and they reported the results were, this virus causes cancer. And it causes cancer in a quick, big way, you know, in test circumstances. And so then the people who were making up the polio vaccine, they thought, oh, let's make sure that it is there. And they found that it was there. And they tried to get rid of it. But they couldn't do it. They couldn't get it out of the vaccine. So what did they do? They tell the public, we have this great new vaccine, which we believe will prevent polio, but it has this cancer-causing monkey virus in it. So we just wanted to tell you that in case that changes your decision on whether or not you want to get this vaccine. But they didn't tell the public that. They didn't tell them at all. And they continued to try to push the vaccine in a national way. And one of the results is the United States and other industrialized countries became the test case for whether or not SV40 really does cause cancer. And in 1998, a national cancer database was analyzed. 17% more bone cancers, 20% more brain cancers, 178% more mesotheliomas were found in people who were exposed to SV40-tainted polio vaccines. The National Institutes of Health created a map showing the geographic distribution of contaminated stock. Using this map, researchers found osteosarcoma bone tumor rates to be 10 times higher than normal in regions where this tainted vaccine was used. Perhaps the most alarming aspect of this ongoing simian virus debacle can be found in other studies suggesting SV40 introduced to humans through the polio vaccine can be passed from human to human and from mother to child. A study of nearly 59,000 women found that children of mothers who received the Salk vaccine between 1959 and 1965 had brain tumors at a rate of 13 times greater than mothers who did not receive those polio shots. And so that's a case where there was a contaminant in the vaccine that they didn't put there intentionally, but they couldn't get out. But what about things that are intentionally put there? Okay. They would never do that, right? They would never intentionally put in a contaminant that would cause problems. Well, here's an article about birth control vaccines. During the 1990s, the world, and this, you can find this, you can find thousands of links to this. World Health Organization had been overseeing massive vaccination campaigns against tetanus in a number of countries, including Nicaragua, Mexico, and the Philippines. And they received communication with Mexican Philip regarding that country's anti-tetanus campaign. Suspicion of the campaign protocols were based on the analysis of several vials of the vaccine that had been analyzed by chemists. Many of the vials were found to contain human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, which is a hormone that controls the how the fertilized egg implants in the uterus. So it's essential for maintaining a pregnancy. And what they were finding is that women who got this vaccine, because the vaccine also contained this hormone, their immune system would attack the contents of the vaccine. They would then develop HCG antibodies, so that if an egg was fertilized, it was very unlikely to implant because their own antibodies would attack the hormone that would allow for normal implantation. So this resulted in sort of a stealth birth control system. Now you'd say, oh, that was just a contaminant. That was an accident. They weren't, entirely meticulous about their laboratory cleanliness or something like that. But then you look further into these campaigns and you say, okay, this was a tetanus vaccine. But only women were vaccinated. Wouldn't the men be more likely to run into circumstances where they would run into tetanus? But not just only women, but only women between the ages of 15 and 45, or the reproductive years. And when you get a tetanus shot, here, you get one once, and then you're good for 10 years. But the vaccine protocols for this tetanus campaign called for multiple injections, 3 within 3 months, and a total of 5 altogether. Doesn't sound like they were treating tetanus at all. So then we are left to imagine that the real purpose of these tetanus campaigns was population control. And now I believe we're going to go to another break, and we'll come back with a few more exploded myths about vaccines. This is Daniel Cobb, Dr. of Oriental Medicine. Welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine, where we're talking about vaccines and, well, what I've just called the myths of vaccines. And we'd love call-in questions. If you want to call in with a question or a comment, 505-424-4550. The next idea that might be running through parents' minds when they think about whether or not to vaccinate their children, is that the CDC, the FDA, the New Mexico State Health Department, they would never require anything unless they knew that it was safe and effective. And safe and effective, comes into the discussion all the time. In fact, the FDA is required to ensure that something is safe and effective before they approve it. but I guess they get to ignore that at their choosing. Many of the vaccines, and this is particularly true of the flu vaccines, are never actually tested. They're fast-tracked through, and because it's sort of a race to get the vaccine produced in time for this year's strain of a particular flu virus. So they have to guess which one they think is going to be the predominant strain in this year's, and then they develop the vaccine, rush it into production, don't test it, because they really don't have time. It's a race. And to, you know, on their side of the issue, they say, well, you know, we are racing against the clock here. If we want to get the flu vaccine out there in time for flu season, we really have to bypass a lot of these steps. But a lot of years, they don't guess the strain of the vaccine, the strain of the virus, well at all, or they miss it entirely. And they say, well, we didn't really do a good job on guessing this year. And so people would think to say, maybe I shouldn't get the flu vaccine, since it doesn't really do a very good job at all at protecting me against the strain that's predominant this year. But if you ask any of the government sources what you should do because they didn't match up very well this year, they'll say, oh, you should get it twice. Make sure you take it. That particular answer doesn't make sense to me, right? They know it's not effective or not very effective. Sometimes, you know, there is a predominant strain. There's always different kinds floating around. So you might be protected against the less common strains. So they can come up with an explanation for why, well, you should take it anyway. But even in cases where, you know, rushing to production is not an issue. Let's say with a mumps vaccine. Sometimes they know that a particular, you know, vaccine is less than optimal. For instance, a recent mumps story about mumps vaccine produced by Merck states that Merck knowingly falsified its mumps vaccine test results to fabricate a 95% efficacy rate. In order to do this, Merck spiked the blood test with animal antibodies. In other words, they couldn't produce the level of antibodies that passes the standard for 90% efficacy rate. In order to artificially inflate the appearance of immune system antibodies. Now, so they were trying to meet an artificial standard, 95, you know, sufficient levels of antibodies in 95% of the case, to claim that their vaccine is effective. Now, I do want to point out that what they're saying is effective is the effective at getting the antibodies into the blood. They don't go to the next step and saying that having the antibodies in the blood is effective at preventing the disease. They go one step off of the final real test. But even then, even that watered down standard, they were willing to fake in order to get a predominant position in the market. And then you think, okay, the government has approved this vaccine based upon fake data, intentionally fake data, based on fraud, you know, scientific fraud. You think, okay, immediately, the next day, they tell everybody, pull all those mumps vaccines. They're based on scientific fraud. They're not nearly, we don't even know if they're effective at all, okay? But that's not what the government did. Rather than taking action on this False Claims Act, the U.S. government simply ignored it, thereby protecting Merck's market monopoly instead of properly serving justice. So the pharmaceutical industry, you know, doesn't have your back. It looks like that the government doesn't have your back either, not when it comes to scientific fraud. Another idea that is really important, and this is the fundamental idea, okay? You'd say, oh, we're willing to put up with all these shenanigans, all this lying, all this cover-up stuff. But, you know, if our children really will be healthier if we give them their required vaccines, then we should do it anyway, right? And overlook all this other stuff. And so you dig into that question. You know, if you look at vaccinated versus unvaccinated group populations, what do you find? So at I believe it was 2010, when the FDA was had employees testifying in front of Congress about vaccines and various issues like this, there was a Representative Posey that posed a question to a Dr. Boyle. I believe it was Colleen Boyle. So clearly, definitively, unequivocally, you know, after having asked the question several times and getting evasive non-answers, he says, unequivocally, you have studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated? Okay. And then finally, Dr. Boyle couldn't evade the question any longer. And so there was a long pause, and then she said, we have not studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated. So this statement says that all their recommendations about effective, all their recommendations about you should take this vaccine are based on not looking at the most fundamental study that could possibly ever be designed to evaluate vaccines. Look at what happens when you vaccinate a group of people and are comparing it to what happens when you don't vaccinate another similar matched group of people. Now, the government hasn't ever looked at this, but individuals and private organizations funding their own studies have looked at it. And here are some results. A German study released in September of 2011 of about 800 unvaccinated children, newborn to 19 years, show that vaccinated children have more than twice the diseases and disorders of unvaccinated children. And you say, oh, okay, an anomaly, right? We wouldn't expect that. But then you go to another study, and this is a study in Guinea-Bissau, and the result of this is children of 15,000 mothers observed from 1990 to 1996, and the result, the death rate in vaccinated children against diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough, or the DTP shot, is twice as high as the unvaccinated children. It's actually more than twice, 10.5 to 4.7%. And then you're starting to think, well, could this be a pattern? There was a New Zealand study where they involved a smaller group, 254 children, with 133 vaccinated, 121 remained unvaccinated. And it was five times as much asthma, twice as much eczema, three times as much ear infections, almost four times as much tonsillitis, almost five times as much shortness of breath, and sudden infant death syndrome, almost 10 times as much, eight times as much hyperactivity. So you think, okay, Well, that argument doesn't work either. And now we're going to go to a break and come back with a final segment. We'll go through just a little more and maybe the worst possible case of ignorance of published studies on the case of the medical establishment. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine, where we're trying to explode a few myths about vaccines just in time for to possibly inform some parents about their options about vaccinating their children. And before I get into the last evidence of government and medical, what I would call misconduct, I do want to point out that there is a vaccine exemption form that if if parents decide they don't want to vaccinate their child, they can get this form and fill it out. And if you fill it out correctly, and this has become much more difficult in recent years, because the form says that you can, if you are claiming a religious exemption, and you don't have to have any documents from a pastor or a religious group. As you say, you can do it religious, you have religious convictions on your own. You can do it as an individual. so you can fill out the form, but a lot of people have been filling out the form and claiming that there's scientific evidence, for instance, that vaccines are dangerous, harmful, cause autism and other neurological deficits. And whereas this information is correct, and you can quote the studies to prove it, it will invalidate your form, because the form is only about religious convictions. So if you're thinking about trying to exempt your child, and you find the form and you fill it out, conform very tightly to the requirements of the form. And in that case, it will probably be approved. But anyway, the last idea that sometimes runs through people's minds is if the news media knew something that would turn our understanding of vaccines on its head, they would certainly be letting us know. It'd be all over the Today Show, the 6 o'clock news. It'd be front and center. They'd repeat it several times. You'd think this would be the obligation of the journalism group, the journalists that are still doing journalism in the United States. And some people realize that, understand that little joke there. But they're not. And this is probably the worst, I get the picture of the United States government with hands over their heads, with the subtext being, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. I want to introduce Russell Blaylock. If you haven't heard the name, he's a retired neurosurgeon, I believe in Mississippi. He was a person that wrote the book called Excitotoxins, a new idea which is really caught fire especially in the alternative community. And he has put forth and published in peer-reviewed journals on several occasions his theory that explains exactly how autism happens and a lot of these other neurological deficits. He says that when you get injected with a vaccine, this stirs up your immune system in a big way. But there's two kinds of an immune system, two major. There's the systemic immune system, and there's an immune system, separate one, inside the brain. And both of them get stirred up. And when this happens, it releases a lot of chemicals that whereas they are intended to fight infection, they also can do damage to cells. And optimally, this should happen for a fairly short period of time. after which the body and the brain get a chance to repair the damage. But what he says is that because injection is such a forceful stirring up of the immune system, that when that immune system of the brain, which is the microglia cells, gets stirred up and get called into action from their sleeping state, sometimes this hyper activity, hyper vigilant state of the brain's immune system lasts for quite a bit longer. It can last for weeks, months, and sometimes even up to 2 years. And so when you take the hypervigilant microglia in the brain that are already on high alert, and then without giving them sufficient time to calm down, to go back to a dormant state, and then you inject them with another vaccine, it takes it, another order of magnitude higher in terms of what it releases, how much potential damage it can do. And what he's saying is that it's not just the mercury, it's not just the aluminum, it's the body's own processes that are being stirred up in a way that is not natural, because injections are not part of nature. And the result, and he says, yes, mercury makes a difference in this overall effect, because mercury heightens the response of the brain's immune system. But even in the absence of mercury, and some people make the mistake of saying, oh, well, we took the mercury out of most of the vaccines and we still got autism, so mercury must have had nothing to do with it. He says, no, that's not it. He even wrote a paper and sent it to the FDA and the CDC and told them this was going to happen. If you take the mercury out of the vaccines, you will still get autism, and it will probably still rise. And his argument was based on this idea of the microglia priming, or, hypervigilance. And, I have heard this. I have heard this because I was alerted to it by my contacts in the anti-vaccine group that I'm aware of. And you can find it on the internet. But I've never once heard Russell Blaylock's name on the 6 o'clock news, on any of the morning shows, the Today Show, Good Morning America, anything like that. I've never heard his name, his books, his theory, which has not been, not been rebutted. Nobody has ever said, okay, here's why Russell Blaylock's theory of the interaction between vaccines and these neurological deficits, including autism, doesn't work, doesn't make sense. No one has ever done that, right? It's accepted. It's gone through the peer review process on several journals, unscathed, but yet it gets absolutely no attention. And this in my mind, we finally got a complete theory that makes perfect sense, and now we're going to pay no attention to it. Well, at least on my show, it gets an airing. Now, let me, in summary, I want to say two things, and I say this every time I bring up vaccines, is that if you keep, like JP said earlier, if you get your nutritional states in good shape, if you optimize your nutrition, whether it's through food or supplements or both, if you get your immune system in tip-top shape, you can almost guarantee that you will not get these diseases. Then there is no logical reason to get these vaccines. The only logical reason remaining is the state's requirement that you either fill out the form correctly to exempt your child or get the vaccines before going to school. So I would, in summary, I would further say that all of these organizations, the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, the Institute of Medicine, the New Mexico Department of Health, you know, whereas it's their responsibility to look after us, especially with respect to drugs and health and these vaccines and whether or not they're safe and effective, I would say that they don't have our back, okay? And in some cases, it's ignorance, but in some cases, it's fraud. And in many cases, they know it. But the industry, the dollars that are involved in this industry are so large that it just creates its own momentum. You can convince people of some things by telling them a couple thousand times. The rest of them, you can bribe. And both of them work. My bottom line message on vaccines is don't take their word for it, and don't take my word for it either. Do your own research. If you do your own research on the internet, you know, get the journal articles. You can get them from the library at the local hospital. If you go through these things, the more you find, the more you are going to conclude that vaccines are not the answer. They are not your friend. You should not vaccinate yourself, and you should look for ways to avoid the vaccination of your friends and family. And that's all for the show. I thank everybody. I thank JP for calling in, and I thank everybody for listening in.